Oh, just decide everything for yourself. Ah. Remember when they say that too, decide for yourself. Like, that's also code word for don't trust anything and destroy all of Western society, right? Because one of the most important aspects of civilization is that we don't decide for ourselves, right? A single human being cannot learn to build a building in their lifetime, like every single part of it, right? You have to rely on other people with specialized knowledge who are learning knowledges that have been passed down by other people because you rely and trust on the fact that the things that they said worked, right? It's not the idea that like any human being can venture into any field and just decide for themselves. Well, no. What you really have to decide for yourself is who do you trust, right? That's what you really have to do.
Should we kill podcasts? Apparently you want to.
Well, obviously we cannot literally abolish podcasts, but I do think it should at least aspirationally be the great abolitionist cause of our times.
Seriously,
like,
there's nothing
like the early abolitionists couldn't envision
podcasts?
How they could get rid of slavery, at least initially. But you know, they worked and they worked hard. They, you know, theorized how to accomplish it, and then lo and behold, history has a way of bending toward justice. Okay, it's a little tongue in cheek. What the premise here, at least from my perspective, is that there is a very much needed critique to be made of the modern podcast ecosystem or the current media environment, because podcasts have pretty much supplanted traditional media in terms of overall influence, in terms of dictating political opinion and social mores. And go and look today, as I did this morning, at the top.
Have you or will you watch the Josiah versus Brad debate? Yeah, maybe after this, yeah.
Podcast in the United States, according to Spotify, for news. Number two is the Tucker Carlson podcast, and he's joined by other, you know, noted nutbag luminaries, such as Candace Owens, in the news category. Not in the entertainment category, not in like the garbage hallucinatory category, in the news category. And so I think that calls for a bit of a thoroughgoing structural critique. Brett was a guest on the Tucker Carlson podcast, recently got millions and millions of views. It's incredibly lucrative. All the incentives militate toward huge profits from this current ethos that prevails in the podcast sector. And you have, you know, Brett, who I have no animosity toward, but I was listening to it.
I don't think I align with Michael Tracy most of the time for his politics, but actually I don't know that. Maybe I do. But I do appreciate that Michael Tracy is his own independent, unique person. All right. I appreciate that about him, and I will always appreciate that about him. One thing that never, ever, ever gets called out ever on any of these podcast spaces, they always talk about like the perverse incentives of the mainstream media and the corporate donors and all this other bullshit. They never talk about the millions or tens of millions of dollars that they all make being anti-corporation, anti-mainstream media, anti-establishment people. They never talk about that ever. So thank you for bringing that up.
And he's going on and on about how there's a hidden Epstein power structure that somehow it might, may or may not have compelled Trump to go to war with Iran, et cetera, et cetera.
To try to adjudicate this here.
Well, I'm giving an example of my, I'm supporting my thesis.
Right, but that seems a bit unfair.
Okay, well, let me just finish my opening remarks and you can respond however you see fit. And so I thought, okay, maybe I'll investigate a little bit more about Brett's perspective on this Epstein issue. Since he says it's the most central issue facing our society today, it gets to the very core of our entire democratic system. So he's on another podcast a few weeks earlier with this guy, Chris Jones, over a million followers on YouTube alone.
Uh-oh.
And Chris Jones introduces the topic by saying, shouldn't we have riots in the streets right now over Jeffrey Epstein because all these files show that they were trafficking and eating children. And Brett just sits there and nods in affirmation. So there is
Michael, you had your opening statement. Thank you very much.
So
we'll cut you off right there.
Uh-oh.
Brett, chance to respond, and then we'll go to Lauren.
Yeah, I don't know exactly why I should need to respond. I was asked.
Or you can have your own opening statement.
I was asked to join a conversation about whether we should end all podcasts, and I believe.
Oh, where is it? Where's the thing? Hold on. Fuck. Point to the board. The Weinsteins, all of the intellectual dark web people and everybody even loosely associated with that term are exclusively here for same team convos or maybe friendly conversations. Although I would call them fake friendly conversations where they're pretending they have some like substantive disagreements, but they're trying to come together and say they have more in common than separate from each other or more in common than different from each other. But it's not really. It's usually over bullshit that they don't even really disagree on that much or they don't even matter. But he thought he was signing up for one of these two things. Michael Tracy is always in fight mode, which I appreciate. Everybody that calls us part of the intellectual dark web is exclusively looking to be platformed on friendly convos with no critical pushback. Although, as I said earlier in our whole earlier drama debacle, that's basically all the media these days.
That is a candidate for being one of the five worst ideas ever. And really, there's some doozies on that list already. But the reason I say that is because what is a podcast? iPod cast. It's the idea that somebody gets to record a conversation and put it up for anybody who wishes to download it and listen to it. It's synonymous with free speech with a new technical twist. Now, you might agree with Michael, and I think with me, that most podcasts are pointless at best. They are not contributing to the culture. They're not a good thing. But that is not an indictment of the form. In fact, many things that are vital have exactly this characteristic.
And all media, in fact, pretty
right, clear. All media. So the question is, what is really being advocated here? Well, cryptically, it's an attack on our ability to discuss issues and reach our own conclusions by whatever mechanism we deem fit. This is literally the central concept undergirding the West, and I believe the West is the best hope that our species has for continuing to exist. So this is a threat because it enables those who would gatekeep our discussions, and all you had to do was watch what took place during COVID in order to understand what a bad idea that is. Might I just ask, how many of you are still getting...
One thing that you should also keep in mind more, and I'm thinking about this more, and I'm trying to front it in your mind more, or bring it to the forefront of your mind more, is the things that these people always say that we need because they're important for the West are always, always, always things that are almost universally being used to destroy the West, right? Freedom of speech is really important. Why is it important? So we can have whatever conversation we need. Why is that important? Because that's a core value for the West. Okay. Well, what kind of conversations are we having? Brexit. Britain needs to leave the United Kingdom. COVID vaccine denialism. The pharmaceuticals are trying to kill all of us and the government can't be trusted. Alberta separatism. Canada needs to break apart. The United States needs to conquer every country in the Western Hemisphere. Ukraine is full of Nazis and they have bioweapon labs and they're evil and terrible. Israel, Palestine. Like, oh, that's just, it's so crazy that it seems like all of the defense of the West platforms that you're talking about are so important for our defense of free speech in Western society are all being used in almost like a coordinated manner to destroy functionally the West.
In your boosters. I don't see, oh, there's a hand. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in a room of, 100. So you're welcome for that. That was podcasters who were not accepting the mainstream narrative challenging it. And because of those podcasters, you now have reasonable doubt that this virus originated from nature. You know it might have come from a lab. You know that those vaccines have massive risks that were not acknowledged up front. And maybe you even know that they're
repurposed
drugs that can safely deal with the disease. That's a benefit of podcasting. If we didn't have it, you'd still all be taking your boosters.
Lauren.
If you didn't have it, you might still believe in vaccines. Thank you. Okay. Good one. True.
Let's come to you. Do we have a voice of sanity here?
Well, I agree with Brett in the sense that podcasts came about as a reaction to mainstream media orthodoxy having one way and one way only of doing things, and they got a lot of it wrong. But there was a overreaction to some extent. What was meant to fix the problem of mainstream orthodoxy became its own wild world of, you know, seeking the financial rewards of attention, political power, manipulation, and now we've got Candace Owens astral projecting into street lamps as the top podcast in America, you know, up there anyways. And I think the solution to this, we can't really put a fascistic law in that, you know, mandates we have the state come to your door and take away your podcast mics at gunpoint, but I think people need to be afraid of making podcasts. They need to be afraid of getting things wrong. Let me ask for this room, how many of you, hands up, would prefer to be punched in the face over trending number one on Twitter as a pedophile?
Sorry, what's the choice here?
Would you prefer to be punched in the face? Put your hand up if you'd prefer to be punched in the face. Or would you rather be trending number one on Twitter with a bunch of podcasters saying you're a pedophile?
I'd want to be punched in the face.
Most people would rather be punched in the face. And we have laws against that. People go to jail if they punch you in the face, right? But we don't have laws against 1,000 podcasters making up things about people. Even the president of France is having trouble.
No, we
don't. Don't we have libel laws?
Libel laws, it costs like $100,000 just to get that started.
I'm not saying
libel laws is bullshit. This is bullshit. Shut the fuck up. It's bullshit. You have to prove malicious intent. Who the fuck is going to sue randoms on fucking Twitter? It's bullshit. These might not even be accounts that exist in the United States. That's a bullshit defense, and this fucking retard knows it.
Have a good system.
We don't
what
have
I'm
a
saying
system.
Is we do have laws.
I'm not calling for the imposition of any fascistic laws, and I'm not literally calling for the abolition of podcasts as such. Unto themselves, podcasts are a neutral forum or a neutral format. But yeah, Brett, I'm sorry to say it is an indictment of the current podcast ecosystem for your podcast, the Dark Horse Podcast, to put out a segment entitled, quote, "Is Epstein Still Alive? Brett Weinstein Thinks So." Brett Weinstein argues that Epstein is probably still alive based on game theory. That was February 13th, 2026. So I'm not saying the government should come in and penalize you for spreading that totally bogus, hysteria-fomenting information, but I don't know, maybe we have to have a kind of cultural expectation.
Wait, fuck, hold on, I'm gonna go back.
Thick laws, and I'm not literally calling for the abolition of podcasts as such. Unto themselves, podcasts are a neutral forum or a neutral format. But yeah, Brett, I'm sorry to say it is an indictment of the current podcast ecosystem for your podcast, the Dark Horse Podcast, to put out a segment entitled, quote, "Is Epstein Still Alive? Brett Weinstein Thinks So." Brett Weinstein argues that Epstein is probably still alive based on game theory. That was February 13th, 2026. So I'm not saying the government should come in and penalize you for spreading that totally bogus, hysteria-fomenting information. But I don't know, maybe we have to have a kind of cultural expectation that there will be some kind of repercussions for you to be peddling that nonsense.
Fuck me. I'm getting one guide by retards in chat. Let me listen to this one more time. Notice in Brett's last response too, he didn't respond to anything that Michael Tracy actually said or whatever. But they, because Weinstein is just here to have a, I think he thought it was just a thing where you say what you're going to say, the next person says what they're going to say, the next person says what they're going to say, and you just go around in the circle and you're not actually talking to each other ever. You just like say a thing and you're not actually confronted ever. But.
Or the imposition of any fascistic laws.
Okay, sorry.
And I'm not
Jesus.
Literally calling I'm for here. The abolition of podcasts as such. Unto themselves, podcasts are a neutral forum or a neutral format. Okay. But yeah, Brett, I'm sorry to say it is an indictment of the current podcast ecosystem for your podcast, the Dark Horse Podcast, to put out a segment entitled, quote, "Is Epstein Still Alive? Brett Weinstein Thinks So." Brett Weinstein argues that Epstein is probably still alive based on game theory. That was February February 13th, 2026. So I'm not saying the government should come in and penalize you.
Okay, so this is before he called him out for a bunch of other things on Joe Rogan. There's another one. Let's see if Weinstein responds to this.
For spreading that totally bogus, hysteria-fomenting information. But I don't know, maybe we have to have a kind of cultural expectation that there will be some kind of repercussions for you to be peddling that
nonsense. Even before you respond to that.
Did you read the Epstein files that you love to talk about so much with autopsy photos before you put out your game theoretical theory?
Okay. I want to propose two remedies, okay? You have raised a segment that I did. The remedy on that one is, go watch it.
Right now. Everybody take 30 minutes and go watch it right now before we can talk about it.
See whether or not...
You get the views and the clicks and you benefit...
I don't care about the views and the clicks. You can look for it on somebody else's...
Hence the incentive structure.
Look, the remedies are clear. You can watch the content and you can decide for yourself. And
oh.
For Michael, who is offended by the content, he can turn it off.
So either watch it and fall into the black hole of retardation or just don't engage and don't confront the people that engage with it and just go off into your own black hole. Oh. What a marketplace of ideas we have right here, by the way, guys. Nice.
Remedy already exists. We don't need anything beyond
so,
that.
So there's truth in what you say, but there's also, from Michael's point of view, I mean, any media has that problem, right? I mean, we've seen stuff on mainstream media. We've seen stuff in books, old-fashioned media, print media, that you could say is 100% wrong, state propaganda, whatever the case might be, right? So it's a broader point than just podcasts, correct?
No, ahead, Lauren, it's not just a broader
point. Yeah, the idea that we can just turn it off. Like, if, let's say, you have the state constantly pushing, you have to get the vaccine, you have to get the vaccine, they're forcing that to trend on YouTube, would you just tell people you have to turn that off, or do you think...
I would certainly say turn off the mainstream media. It has proven it is no longer capable of doing this job. And the only remedy we have is to discuss it ourselves. You can listen to all of the people who are claiming some expertise and decide for yourself. That's the whole reason podcasts work. Now, let's talk about books.
The funny thing is that...
What did he say? Let's talk about books? Wait, what?
Now, let's talk about books.
The funny...
Oh my God.
The thing is that perspective is said quite frequently, but we...
I'm curious. Can somebody... I'm just curious, because fucking why the fuck not? Can somebody link me the podcast where he's talking about Epstein maybe still being alive at the timestamp that they're talking about? I'm curious.
Know from Nazi propaganda times that the amount that people actually tend to believe in a particular thing is very correlated, not with whether it's true, but how many times they've heard it.
And the remedy
and
is
that's
what?
A challenge.
And the remedy is what? Having CNN blaring nonsense about COVID in every airport and having people digest
that's
it on
mass media.
That's an interesting
perspective. I mean, there's different meetings. You said mass media like it's one thing.
I want to go back to your point about books, okay? Do the same analysis Michael has done with podcasts and do it with books. And you know what you're going to find? You're going to find most books are not contributing to the culture, but Michael is not going to advocate for getting rid of the form. What's more, Michael is not going to take responsibility for the fact that among those books, you're going to find The Communist Manifesto, a book which has resulted in the death of 60 to 100 million people. So...
Like, this guy considers himself an intellectual, and people watch him thinking he's, like, an intellectual. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what the fuck, guys? Hold on, let's... Quick break.
Now I want to get to the reason that I think...
I do look at this as a case of...
This segment is titled, Epstein Probably Did Survive. Brett Weinstein explains why.
Now I want to get to the reason that I think Epstein probably did survive.
Before you do, does it matter?
Yes and no. I mean, for one thing...
It seems to me that he was a puppeteer, but he wasn't, it seems, a brilliant puppeteer.
Well, let's put it this way. If you survived, that describes a landscape of people who participated in dodging justice for him, mm-hmm. in hoodwinking the public, in breaking the justice system. So the point is, that's a vast crime of its own, right? We had
a
right.
But that's a different question from does it matter if he still lives?
Well,
if he lives, then that implies more crimes yet.
But it also, I think, is suggestive of where we should be looking for this power to be continued. To be wielded. So to the extent that the thing is still alive, Epstein having survived is meaningful because, wow, is it an important feature of the Game of Thrones that's being conducted.
What you're seeing here, this is the funnel. This is the end stage of the funnel. They're in a totally, 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 totally different reality right now, right? So you guys might be spamming shit in chat, but this makes perfect sense to everybody listening. It's like, yes, they've been prepped for this for the past 2 years listening to this crazy shit. This woman right here, by the way, is his wife also. And I think both of these people are PhD level degree holders. So they're not just like random retards either. It's just like, I don't even know how many of these comments are real. When I saw his interview from jail, he was as far from suicidal as possible. He seemed almost smug. I'm a licensed security installer. This is beyond sketchy. A suburban police beat cop on his first day at work should have been able to recover the footage.
So, I think that the game theory, quite apart from the evidence, and there is evidence that's weird. There's evidence that there was a decoy vehicle when Epstein supposedly killed himself. You know, designed to mislead the press as to what vehicle to follow. Could you put up the evidence of the hard drive having been wiped? So, okay, I tweeted, nothing to see here, literally, in response to an account called Brian Allen, who says, newly released documents show an FBI agent removed the hard drive from the jail's camera, wiping all the footage from the night Jeffrey Epstein died.
When was it wiped? Was this months after, like, images were taken of the disk? Or what is this even about? Or did they fabricate whole new footage, or?
And then if you look at the documents, which are unfortunately a little blurry, I think I have a copy here. It's the second one, Jen. So this one is a document, appears to be the interview of a witness who has been redacted on 3/12/2020. It's page 2 of 2, page 1.
How do people get sucked in? You make it sound like a black hole with no escape. Is that your theory? If so, well, yeah, if you're on the For You pages, there's no escape. They're gone. This was the thing that I described before. Now I've kind of like fully fleshed it out. But remember how before I would tell you, like, man, if a friend messages me, have you seen this Candace Owen thing? I know that I have like 6 months left with that friend until they're forever gone. And this has happened multiple times to me in my real life with people who are not like chronically online lunatics. Like, this has just happened. Now I understand the reason why is because once they're getting that in their feed and they didn't go out and seek it out, if they continue to scroll on the infinite feeds, they're just being presented more and 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 more of that stuff. I can try to correct on one or two things, but I'm just one voice against the thousands that they're getting, you know, shoved into their infinity scrolls. And it's impossible. It's impossible for them to, unless you cut off access. You have to cut off access from those scrolls. But I mean, obviously that's the whole thing. Yeah.
One of two is also included here. It says, told to start working on the system, then redacted started removing the bad drives in order to rebuild the DVR. Redacted advised that an FBI agent was the one who pulled out the DVR. Redacted also advised that he knew that by replacing both hard drives, the system would be wiped, and that he had advised personnel at MCC of that.
MCC is the correctional facility where Epstein was?
Yeah. So there is evidence. The story that we are given is that there was massive failure in the technology at the prison site.
It's bad luck.
Well, I think there is massive failure of the technology. It's not well maintained, which of course leaves open the option to make.
It takes a special type of person to get pulled into it and be able to realize that they are wrong and try to challenge themselves. Yeah, of course, it's not like a normal thing. And it shouldn't be a normal thing because you kind of trust what other people are saying around you. And this is how we build our world. You have to have some trust of the people around you and the things you hear around you, right?
To hide something with technological failures. But the claim here, which I find frankly extraordinary.
The claim in what you just read.
Yeah, is that the drive, that there were failures of multiple drives. There was only one drive, I think, that was likely to have the footage. It had failed. And in order to replace it to get the system back up and running after his death, they knew that it would wipe the data off this drive. Now, that...
I don't know if that's what that paragraph said at all, but okay.
...contravenes my understanding of how most drives work, whether this was a physical disk drive or an SSD. There's no reason that memory should be volatile. And of course, the FBI should have captured whatever drive was removed. And there's, of course, an industry that specializes on recovering data, even deleted data,
right,
from hard drives and things. So I don't understand what the claim even is, why it would have been deleted, but let's say that that claim is valid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why on earth, in light of the crime that was committed, would you not have moved heaven and earth to preserve whatever evidence was there? Because the question about whether he killed himself is painfully obvious, especially in light of the failure. You know, the guards were asleep.
I just don't get how people can fall into some of the insane stuff like Candace Owens shit, MAGA stuff. I kind of get, but I don't see how anyone could believe Charlie Kirk is a time traveler communicating via astral projection. Well, the problem is, like, once you've broken down everything, like, I think it's possible to make people believe anything, right? Like, every single part of our online media apparatus, and fuck that, even just go to social media. Like, if there's a post about cops, it's how the system is corrupt, and, oh, the cops are going to investigate themselves. If you post a thing about layoffs, oh, it's probably because there was major profit at the large corpo, and they're trying to cut all the people out. If you post a thing about foreclosures on housing, oh, it was probably some hedge fund that bought up the homes and it evicted all the people. If you bring up something, like, every single bad thing in your life can be traced back to some malicious actor that's part of the system. It's why the populism shit is so popular right now, is because it is the whole system and every part of it is rigged and corrupt against you, and it's capitalism and corporations and the police forces and the Epstein class and everything. And it's like, Jesus, every fucking thing, everything is like that now.
The camera system wasn't working in the right place. Some dude had been moved into his cell, some murderer. So there's all kinds of reasons that there you would want to be able to nail down exactly what happened if that's what you were trying to do. And it is very convenient that the hard drive apparently got wiped in an attempt to repair the system.
Have you had different experiences where you try to explain to them how the loop works and how dangerous it is? Like, is there anything we can do other than abolishing these For You pages, or at least removing news from the algorithm? I used to speak about this more in the past. I haven't brought it up in a while. But one thing that I said that was so illuminating to me, I think I just totally lucked into this. I either had a good teacher or a good textbook. In high school, I took an AP Psych class. So my guess is probably this is equivalent to like a Psych 101 class. And I feel like the only thing we did all year long, it must have been other stuff, but I feel like the biggest thing we did all year long was just learn how untrustworthy the human brain is in its natural state. That you can, like, you have so many different memory biases, eyewitness testimonies, just horrendously unreliable. The way that you remember and recall things is not like a one-to-one recording of an event. The way that you encode for memory, the way that you... just like so many things that are like unreliable about your brain. And I left that class like thinking about that a lot. It stuck with me for some reason. Like, ooh, there's like a lot of... you got to be careful. There's a lot of weird shit. This was also about the time that I was coming off of my huge like Ayn Rand kick. And I started to realize like, okay, well, I became an atheist. And then I had a friend recommend me Anthem. And then I read Atlas Shrugged and I became a full on fucking objectivist. And I was ready to like give my whole life for the cause and fucking supported Rumpel and everything else. And it's like, well, wait a second. What are the chances that I became an atheist? And the very first author that I picked up happened to have the answer to everything. Okay, fuck, I'm probably just an impressionable young fucking retard. That's more likely than not that's what's happened, rather than I just stumbled upon the author who's correct about everything, right? But our brain in our normal state is just not always the most trustworthy, unbiased deliverer of information, and there's a lot of ways that it can be manipulated. But most people don't think about that. Most people feel like they're pretty well in control of what they think and what they see, and they can audit their own information. So when you start to present to somebody like, hey, you might be part of some like wacko fucking media ecosystem, like you're asking that person to accept as a premise that their mind could be totally wrong in evaluating every part of the reality almost. It's the equivalent of telling somebody like, listen, I just wanted to chat with you. I understand that you've been religious, but like, I think God is not real, bro. That's like, you're about to rewrite my whole reality. Like that's a very, 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 very tough call to make. And I don't even know if we have, anything. I there's just nothing comparable to the internet shit these days, I don't think. Because it's just so much. It's so much bombardment with information, with people controlling the top of that funnel.
Guards were asleep. The camera system wasn't working in the right place. Some dude had been moved into his cell, some murderer. So there's all kinds of reasons that you would want to be able to nail down exactly what happened if that's what you were trying to do. And it is very convenient that the hard drive apparently got wiped in an attempt to repair the system, if that happened. Okay, but I don't think any of the evidence we have so far is more than suggestive. And some of it, I think, turns out to be garbage. So there was a brief flurry of excitement over the fact that Epstein appears to have had a Fortnite account, a video game, that continued to be active after his death. Fortnite put out a press release in which they said that some other account had changed their name to look like Jeffrey Epstein's account as a prank or whatever. Hilarious. But the point is, okay, so that could be just some lone person doing something stupid, or it could be what's called flooding the zone, where you're trying to figure out what happened and lots of garbagey conspiracy theories are introduced.
Is Brett a tier one or tier two or whatever you call them? I feel like Brett is a tier two. I think this is a sucker who actually believes this shit. I just, when I look at these people, there are just people that I perceive as being not very confident and can be like kind of like drawn along with the crowd. This is a total like psychological analysis. I don't have any proof of that. I don't have any reason to think that. But I think that he got his feelings personally hurt over the, not Evergreen, that's the college or whatever, where I think he was in the right. I thought that was fucking retarded. He was one of the victims of peak woke, I think, where was Evergreen the school that he taught at? Basically, I think this was like at the heyday of like this BLM shit, where the black students and the woke self-hating white students were like, we're going to have a day where no white people should go to school to celebrate how black people used to not be able to go to segregated schools or whatever. And Brett wrote a whole thing where he's like, you know, if there are students who want to take a day off because they feel like it, you know, helps them remember this particular thing or whatever, I think that's super great and they should do that. I do feel like it's a little bit weird to tell white people to take a day off for this. I don't know if I'm exactly comfortable with that. Students are free to do what they want, but like, I'm going to show up and teach my class. And he got eviscerated for that. He was Destiny, you are insane, bro. You're wrong on this. That is not how it went down. Is it not? If you want, link me. I would be glad to be wrong about this, but I feel like I did go into this at one point because I did want to know what were the origins of this. I think I read his email. Shoot me. What was his email? Brett Weinstein email, Evergreen day off from Brett Weinstein. Dear Rashida, when you first described the new structure for day of absence / day of presence at a past faculty meeting where no room was left for questions, I thought I must have misunderstood what you said. Later email seemed to muddy the waters further while inviting commitments to participate. I now see from the boldface text in this email that I had indeed understood your words correctly. There is a huge difference between a group or coalition deciding to voluntarily absent themselves from a shared space in order to highlight their vital and underappreciated roles, the theme of the Douglas Turner Ward play Day of Absence, as well as the recent Women's Day walkout, and a group or coalition encouraging another group to go away. The first is a forced call to consciousness, which is, of course, crippling to the logic of oppression. The second is a show of force and an act of oppression in and of itself. You may take this letter as a formal protest of this year's structure, and you may assume I will be on campus on the day of absence. I would encourage others to put phenotype aside and reject this new formulation, whether they have registered for it or not already, on a college campus, one's right to speak or to be, Must never be based, or to be on campus, I guess, must never be based on skin color. If there was interest in a public presentation, a discussion of race through a scientific slash evolutionary lens, I would be quite willing to organize such an event. It is material I have taught in my own programs and guest lectured on at Evergreen and elsewhere. Everyone would be equally welcome and encouraged to attend such a forum, irrespective of ethnicity, belief structure, native language, political leanings, or position at the college. My only requirement would be that people attend with an open mind and a willingness to act in good faith. I don't know what he was teaching through then, but I don't know if this, I don't think this is like hardcore race realist shit. I don't think so. I think this was super fun. I think the inversion of this, like, the school used to have like a day of absence where, I don't know if it was just black students or people that were part of this coalition would stay home for a day to show that, like, well, you know, when minorities are gone from your life, you know, you miss them and it's important. And they twisted this into like a, we think that all white people should not go to school on this day. You should stay home. And it was just like so cringe. I think that, I feel like his email here and his position on it was fine. And the reaction to him, the reaction to him was just crazy. Like, students were like screaming outside. He was like massively fucking protested off of the college campus. Maybe I watched this in the past. Some people's shut up. No one cares. Good one. Good one. Good one. Good one. Good one. Gistical and Esports Batman are cutting off my direct connection to YouTube. I can prove this. I have Discord logs of them talking about it.
I haven't disagreed with other folks on this campus about the way there. Okay? But I'm not an unreasonable person. I'm not uninterested. I'm not uninformed about history. I know the case of those things. I have arrived where I've arrived from a different route. I've arrived there through academic study. I know why racism happens.
We live racism. We don't have to study it to understand it. We live it.
And the issue what a stupid statement.
Everything. What about all the racist minds that you're trying to have about black people?
This is a protest here. Our presence now is our protest.
We come here as students against campus racism and against anti-blackness on campus. And we would like to reach out to the students of color, the humanities, as well as the scientists that we are here to support.
And we want to dismantle anti-blackness and divide. We want to get some sense of solidarity and provide safety and outside of our house.
Will you listen to me?
Yeah.
Okay. No, not me. Please.
No, keep your side.
Go!
Okay. I'm committed to equity. I'm committed, I believe, that anyone on this campus, I happen to disagree with other folks on this campus about the way there. Okay? But I'm not an unreasonable person. I'm not uninterested. I'm not uninformed about history. I know the implications of these things. I have arrived where I've arrived from a different route. I've arrived there through academic study. I know why racism happens.
We lived racism. We don't have to study it to understand.
This was back when, yeah, this was like peak like anti-SJW or SJW shit 2017. It was, whoo. The funny thing is that like Brett was like, this is also why a lot of these guys never admit now that they're conservatives, because back then Brett probably was like a progressive-ish type lib, right? This, he was faculty at a university, right? And you could even read in his email where he's literally saying, like, I think it's important to have these types of events where certain members, you know, might withdraw from participation. I think that this logic is crippling to oppression and everything. Like, he has, like, all the right vernacular and lingo. Unless he was, like, secretly super conservative. I just never saw the evidence of that. Yeah, it just... Yeah, but anyway, I always say this, like, people will have, like, this one event that mind fucks them and just completely sets them on a different path politically for the rest of their lives. I think it happened to Jordan Peterson over the trans stuff, too, that bill, the C-16 stuff. And it just, they're, yeah, they just get completely fucking like spun out into another universe. Sorry, holy shit, what a fucking, anyway, that was a tangent of a tangent. We're on this tangent, back to this tangent.
Used into the milieu so that you can't sort reality from garbage, but all right.
Oh, anyway, all that to say, I think he's a genuine believer. I think he's a tier two mindfucker. Like, I think this is a guy who, if like there's another COVID, he won't get the shot. He won't trust it. He won't believe it. I genuinely believe that for this guy, yeah.
Here's my point. Put the evidence of something fishy around Epstein's death aside. And let's do this from pure game theory. Epstein, whether it was the purpose of what he was doing, one of the purposes, or not the purpose at all, had a lot of compromise on some of the most important, powerful people on Earth. You know, members of the royal family, people at the top of science, universities, government. He had a lot of compromise on powerful people. That means two things. One, it means that he would have perceived a certain amount of danger, because to the extent that people had done things in his presence that then jeopardized them later, the temptation to eliminate him so that that stuff did not come to light must have been on a lot of people's minds.
Yep.
And two, he had the purest, most refined material with which to fashion a dead man switch. Does the term ring a bell?
I think you talked about this last time.
So the point is, he would have understood.
I mean, I know what it means, but you may, if you thought I didn't, it's possible that some people in our audience don't.
A dead man switch.
Oh, shit, I understand now. I'm so sorry. I get this now. This is the evolution of the response to my question. Not saying that he heard my response, but I always ask people, hold on. Epstein was the most prolific blackmailer of all time, right? Yes. He did have a client book, right? Yes. So he was ready to blackmail every wealthy person on the planet, right? Yes. Then why the fuck did he get arrested? What? Why would he have been allowed to live for a single day in a U.S. federal jail arrested, knowing that he had blackmail material on every single powerful person on the planet? And then, now this is the next evolution of the conspiracy. You're right, Destiny. That's why he's not even fucking dead. He escaped. Ah!
Is something that is designed...
Has it ever been established that Epstein had all this dirt on powerful people? Nope. All of that is delusional fantasy. Nothing in the Epstein, nothing even remotely suggests that. This is all just, but everybody believes this, including at least half the people watching me right now.
If you thought I didn't, it's possible that some people in our audience don't.
A dead man switch is something that is designed to be revealed if you suffer an untimely death in order that those who might want to kill you will not do it. And my feeling is Jeffrey Epstein may not have been the swiftest tool in the shed, but he was certainly smart enough to understand. Yeah, the swiftest tool. He wasn't the sharpest bulb in the drawer. But he was certainly smart enough to understand, A, that he was in jeopardy, and B, that he could change the set of incentives around eliminating him such that were he to find himself in prison, he couldn't just simply be suicided. So I think, let's just go through the set of possibilities. It is possible Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. Why would he have done that? He would have killed himself because he didn't want to face the consequences for what would be revealed in a trial. Okay? On the other hand, he had a lot of power. He had a lot of powerful people who had an interest in him not saying what he knew on the stand, making a plea deal, throwing bigger fish under the bus. So would he have killed himself in order to avoid a trial in which he actually had cards that may well have allowed him to get a sweetheart deal the way he did in his first trial? Doesn't sound likely. This is somebody who might have done that only if he thought he didn't have any other options. And we were a long way from finding out that he didn't have any other options. So that raises the question of whether or not he was suicided. Would he have been suicided? Well, he would have been.
That's an Aurelian word.
I don't know. So this is basically just him opining on this completely baseless conjecture on some shit that he invented his mind. This is just retarded. This is the intellectual dark web. Okay. I'm glad we watched this. Thank you. Back to this. Okay. So thank God we watched that. What a great segment. Thank you.
Among those books, you're going to find The Communist Manifesto, a book which has resulted in the death of 60 to 100 million people. So it has a debt to pay. Now, I'm not advocating we get rid of it. I'm advocating you read the good ones, you put down the bad ones, and you decide for yourself. That's
how. Oh, just decide everything for yourself. Ah. Remember when they say that too, decide for yourself. Like, that's also code word for don't trust anything and destroy all of Western society, right? Because one of the most important aspects of civilization is that we don't decide for ourselves, right? A single human being cannot learn to build a building in their lifetime, like every single part of it, right? You have to rely on other people with specialized knowledge who are learning knowledges that have been passed down by other people because you rely and trust on the fact that the things that they said worked, right? It's not the idea that like any human being can venture into any field and just decide for themselves. Well, no. What you really have to decide for yourself is who do you trust, right? That's what you really have to do.
That's how the West works, and Michael is actually more interested in having some authority, not elected, tell you what to think than allowing the messiness of us hashing it out for ourselves.
Hashing it out? Why not hash it out then? He's here to hash it out with you right now. You don't want to hash it out, though.
Completely wrong. I'm urging everyone to do what they can to develop the critical faculties necessary so that when they consume a podcast like Brett's and they're told blaringly that Epstein could still be alive because of some game theory nonsense that Brett cooked up and just, you know, throws out there and then, you know, rakes in the clicks and the cash from, that they'll have like the cognitive abilities to see that they're being fed total nonsense. And notice he doesn't even attempt to defend what he puts out on the merits.
Yep. I said this before. Yeah. Tracy brought up like two or three different things now, and he doesn't even try. Brett Weinstein didn't even try to defend any of the crazy shit he said. He didn't even address it. He was like, let's talk about books now.
Accuses me of wanting to arrogate some authority to myself to gatekeep or to restrict anybody from consuming this podcast slop. I'm not saying that is even possible to do. What I'm saying is we need a social norm of some kind so that you face some kind of penalty for putting out this stuff. And then also, and then using that as a basis.
I should face a penalty
people,
for making
people that,
an analytical
argument? That their children were eaten by cannibals? And you don't think there's an issue with that? You bring up the Communist Manifesto? Of course, I don't want to ban books or even ban podcasts. I want a more healthy media ecosystem where there's some penalty to be paid if you chronically delude the masses.
There is.
You are contributing
there
to.
There is a penalty
and also, oh my God, on Tucker's podcast, you and him are so, you're so concerned. Epstein is the Rosetta Stone, the pedophile trafficking Rosetta Stone that will explain why Trump went to war with Iran. Trump has no power because of this hidden power structure. Rather than doing a real political critique that is fact-based and empirical, what you do is invoke all of these metaphysical claptrap concepts that gets everybody, you know, worked up and gets you a lot of ad revenue, and everybody
true.
Is much
true.
Less well-informed.
So there's a man. I bet after this, Brett's going to want to go in on Michael Tracy to prove him wrong about what was a huge attack against the credibility of his entire show, right? Are you really going to let those attacks against everything you've said stand for? No way, right? No way.
Worked up and gets you a lot of ad revenue, and everybody is much less well-informed. Because
so there's a proceeding.
My podcast was demonetized for 5 years
Good.
By YouTube for discussing vaccine dangers with the mRNA platform, okay? We
right,
paid a huge
everybody's penalty. Life doesn't revolve around vaccines. At this
no, a lot of people's do, and a lot of people aren't here because they took them. And there's a very clear
I'm going to disagree with you.
Where's the evidence for that?
You on that one.
You want to disagree? Then let's do it.
I don't disagree with your right to...
Let's do it. Oh, do it. Fight.
Say what you're saying, but I think that they saved millions.
Why the fuck have you not talked to Tracy? He's your fucking ally. What do you mean? He was here like a couple weeks ago in my fucking apartment.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
You want to disagree? Then let's do it.
I don't disagree with your right to say what you're saying, but I think that they saved millions of lives, and I think that the science is on that side.
You know, you know that the claim that they saved millions of lives is based entirely on a computer
model. I moderate this panel. Holy freaking mother.
That was 2 months ago? That's what I said. 2 or 3 months ago.
There needs to be any regulation or consequence when people get things wrong.
Regulation of people getting things wrong? No.
Of course not. You should just be able to lie with impunity.
If it harms others.
There is a consequence.
There is a consequence. Your podcast will be less popular.
I have been in media for a decade, and I have tried to pursue defamation cases, and it's always $100,000 just to begin the process.
Right.
If you're an average person that's getting slandered, getting lied about in the media, they're getting things wrong, these processes, especially in America, the defamation process is near impossible.
Okay, we're going to give Lauren the floor a little longer because you guys have talked a lot, and also she seems to make some sense.
Have I made no sense?
You have made some sense, but okay. You are also very vitriolic, which sometimes...
This is the one of the most cancerous things that has happened to all of the discourse. The worst person, I can't break through. And you guys always like post on the subreddit, and I think about ways to break through and whatever. But like I've realized this in the past is you cannot overcome a bad moderator. It poisons the conversation so much. People like this, I don't even know if he's aware of it, do so much more damage to the discourse than anything else, right? Like, I think that Lauren, I think that everything she said here has actually been pretty on point. I would agree with all of it. But him saying that Lauren is the only one here making sense and these two aren't because they're mean, because they're talking loudly, because Michael Tracy is trying to be confrontational, it is so fucking cancerous. It is such fucking AIDS cancer when people do shit like this. Like, it's speech. We should be able to shout at each other. We should be able to scream at each other. We should be able to have disagreements and hash it out, as you say. But this whole, like, well, you guys are just being vitriolic. Is he's being vitriolic because he called him out on lying about some things on his podcast? There weren't even personal attacks in here. What, like?
Second.
Have I made no sense?
You have made some sense, but you were also very vitriolic, which sometimes detracts from it.
Okay.
Lauren's going to have the floor, please. Lauren, what is your solution here? Because, like, it is true that many harmful and wrong things go on many different forms of media. It's also true that many of us will have different ideas about which ones are wrong and which ones are harmful. It's also true that...
This is like this is the propaganda model 101, is to make it so that everything is the same as everything else, right? There is no fact of the matter for anything. There is no fact of the matter. Like, well, I think that this guy, killed this other dude. Well, this other guy thinks that dude didn't kill the other dude. Oh, well, I mean, you can both have your own opinion and, you know, everybody's entitled to what they want to believe and, you know, anybody could be right. They both think they're right. And it's like, well, how about we do what we're supposed to fucking do in a fucking conversation and we assess the strengths of our fucking argument? Isn't that the whole fucking point of the format? It's not just to give a bullet point list of talking points. It's supposed to be that we go back and forth on the credibility of our statements to figure out who's correct. Why are we pretending like it is? And people, these guys, the talkers, the podcasters, they love to live in the ambiguity of fact and the idea that, like, well, you say that you want to censor everybody that's telling people to fuck their own dicks down their throats. And I say that people might disagree over who's telling you to do that. So really, we can't have any argument about this whatsoever. And it's all bullshit and it's all moot. And there's no way that we can ever know. It's like, there's no fact of the matter whatsoever. Or they'll pull out the, like, well, how could we ever determine that? How could we ever determine what's true or what's false? How could we ever determine the fact of the matter or anything? It's like, well, I don't know. How do we determine, like, what's true or false in literally anything? Have you ever had a disagreement with a friend before? Do you guys ever determine who's right or wrong? Have you ever been to court before? Do you ever determine who's right or wrong? Have you ever published a paper before? Do you ever determine who's right or wrong? Have you ever talked to an engineer before? Do they run tests to determine what's right or wrong? Like, what is this idea? For some reason in politics or for some reason in podcast spaces, it is literally impossible to even conceive of there being a right or wrong answer to anything. Why? That's such a weak, tepid defense of the discourse and the idea that you should never have confrontational conversations or that there can never be a person deciding that who, you know, somebody is objectively correct or incorrect as per some statement.
Or
we don't have the education systems, especially in the United States, also in Canada to a degree, that are giving people the intellectual tools that they really need to be smart about media choices and to understand, is this likely to be true? How do I research it? Should I research it? Should I just believe it? What is your potential solution?
Yeah, I mean, people tune into the media because they don't have time in their day-to-day life to keep up with every single event happening. And I understand why people do that. And it's our job in the media to do the research. But the incentive structure is, I need to get 5 videos out a week, otherwise the algorithm isn't going to promote me. I need to be online 24/7, otherwise I'm not going to be the first to report on this story. So the incentive structure absolutely has to change. And I do think there needs to be more, A, social shame around starting podcasts. No, your 4 buddies in their basement probably shouldn't start a podcast because they don't know what they're talking about. They haven't done any
Or she's kind of correct, but I would even qualify that more. Anybody can start a podcast if they want. Just be mindful of what you're podcasting about, okay? If you have, like, the 4 buddies in a basement talking about beer podcast, and you guys compare the light beers that you buy at the gas station over what makes what movies the best to watch, I think that's totally fine. But when it's, like, me and my retarded friend talking about where we really think the Ayatollah went to and why Epstein and Hitler are partying today on beaches in Argentina, like, maybe not. Maybe that's just not a place that you need to ever have an opinion publicly shared about.
Research and they don't have any background in this topic. That's the only way we stop things like vaping, this and that, was making it embarrassing to do. And there does need to be stronger defamation laws.
But how do you enforce something like that without being a fascist?
How do you enforce that? Well, once again, socially, there has to be a level of social shame. It has to become embarrassing. And then, which I think it's already
apparently nothing is embarrassing in the world anymore. We see what the President of the United States tweets or puts out on Truth Social.
She's just advancing a nicer version of my thesis.
I know.
Somebody in YouTube chat, General So X2H. He didn't say there is no fact. His point is when something becomes a partisan issue, simple debate doesn't ensure the truth prevails. Yeah, but the issue is every single thing now is a partisan debate. Things that were never considered partisan before are now partisan debates, right? Like, some of you guys might be younger. I'm not trying to big bro you. Sorry, is what I said. Sorry, it's not a message. What I mean is that, like, if you go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, I don't know how far you'd have to go back. So I'm just giving an example. Wacky diets used to exclusively be, like, hippie far left things. I'm trying to think. Like, if somebody was coming out here saying, like, I'm on a carnivore diet, or I'm on a the no carb one, ketogenic diet or whatever. Like, these things were all kind of, like, they were either old for, like, middle age, older women, weight loss fads, or they were, like, far left hippie things. Even anti-vaccine stuff, I don't know if there's a link to this, even anti-vaccine stuff used to be more kind of like hippie far left, far the fuck out there things. The idea that, like, every single one of these things has become like a hyper-partisan issue now, I think, is by design. Everything is partisan. Every single thing that is of monumental importance to the West functioning is now by design a partisan issue that we are never allowed to have a factual consensus on anymore. Like, it just can't be, right? Is there corruption in government spending or waste, fraud, and abuse in the government, right? Is there corruption in the government? Is there, did we land on the moon? Like, just every single fucking thing, it has to be some part of some larger conspiracy, part of some, like, if we want to argue, are trans children, like, is this a class of people that should be able to, with parental and physician consent, be able to pursue hormones? Well, we can't actually consider the research. What we have to really consider is the fact that big gay and the left might be using this to, through the vector, the attack vector of drag queens, to transify all of your children in, or I don't even know what for. I don't even know what the fuck the reason was for. Just to fuck with you, I guess. The deep state was evil and they had nothing else better to do that day but to fuck with you by transing your kid. I don't even know. Like every single fucking thing now is a partisan issue that's beyond factual analysis and has to be debated in the marketplace of ideas. And by debated in the marketplace of ideas, I mean platformed on Joe Rogan and all of his loser, flunky, comedian wannabe spinoff shows where nobody actually is confronted or critically challenged on any of these things ever.
Thesis. Yes, I'm sorry, there should be some social
repercussion. I'm Canadian and it's good to be nice.
Not a legal repercussion, not Trump coming in and throwing you in a prison cell, but some kind of social repercussion for putting out a segment on March 28th, 2026
the second largest podcast
in the United States.
Make your comments a little more general,
dark warning
Michael,
to Trump.
Michael,
no, I mean, we're on stage with people who
I understand. Yeah, like, if I was my, why would I say this? I have been Michael Tracy. I know this feeling. Make your comments more general. Why? I have a purveyor of misinformation right here. Why would I make my comments more general when I can just talk to him right here? He's literally right here. This is the guy right here.
I understand.
All right.
But I don't want to bring up the
pitchfork.
Then I get to respond.
Brett, since you like alluding to it because it really gets everybody enticed and enthralled and clicks on the video or downloads the podcast or tunes into the stream, why don't you just say straight up whether you think Donald J. Trump has been blackmailed by Jeffrey Epstein and or Israel, and that is why he went to war with Iran? Because you like just
okay, let him answer that question.
Then people
let him answer that. Okay, Michael, holy shit, somebody cut his mic, please.
So spell it out.
Michael, Brett, please answer the question.
Thank you.
I'm entertained.
All right.
Are you not entertained? Brett, briefly and without the vitriol would be nice.
I did not sign up to be here on trial. So I'm going to respond as if this were a podcast. We are just having a discussion.
Oh, my God.
Now, Michael has advocated that there should be some penalty for being wrong. Okay. Now, my point would be, in science, and I am a scientist, I'm also a game theorist, so this is my specialty. In my world, the only arbiter of truth is not whether it's published in a journal, and it's not whether it's said by somebody with an advanced degree. It's whether it has predictive power. A model's value, its truth value, is built entirely based on whether it has predictive power. That is also the mechanism that should be functioning in the land of podcasts. You should listen to a podcast, and you should hear ideas advanced, and then you should see how they map onto the world that develops thereafter.
It's a general, this is a slop. It's a slop response. When he says, I'm going to pretend like I'm on a podcast, what he means is he wants to have this conversation. Yes, and. Yes, and. Yes, and. Same team conversations. You show up with both audiences understanding that you're both in the same team, and you'll mainly be there as a PR / bolster campaign for either the smaller or both parties. This describes essentially every single Trump and MAGA appearance on every single conservative media platform. These conversations allow for conservatives to pilot ridiculous arguments with basically zero pushback from the interviewer. The talking points there end up downstream from Trump and others in the admin. Oh, the talking points that end up downstream from Trump and others in the admin will start here. Style. Lots of yes and. Lots of layup questions. Essentially zero disagreement on substance or rhetoric. The goal here is essentially to spread the talking points for everyone else to carry forward. This is what he's doing. This is it. This is what when he says, I want to respond like I'm on a podcast, that's what he's talking about. He means a hug box safe zone where nobody actually registers any substantial disagreement whatsoever. That's it.
Built entirely based on whether it has predictive power. That is also the mechanism that should be functioning in the land of podcasts. You should listen to a podcast and you should hear ideas advanced, and then you should see how they map onto the world that develops thereafter.
How do I map onto the world that develops thereafter? Would you guys change your model of the world every 2 months? And then, like, so what? So Epstein is alive somewhere. We don't know where. We have no evidence of this. And he's still controlling world politics by making. So because Epstein is alive somewhere else in the world and he has blackmail on Donald Trump, he's working for Israel to make Donald Trump go to war with Iran, but not fully go to war with Iran because we didn't boots on the ground. And it's just like, what are we predicting here? Hello?
Sure. Do you think the average person is doing this, though, when they're more online than they are in their communities?
I think we are doing it very badly in large measure because of the way the algorithms push us towards things that are contentious rather than monitor what is
actually...
Push us towards things that are contentious. Shouldn't that be what we want, though? Wait, do you not trust people to view contentious content? You don't trust them? I thought he thought that we could view it ourselves and figure out what is going on. No?
An algorithm that you're exploiting?
I am not exploiting that algorithm. I'm paying because of that algorithm.
So you're advising everyone to
employ some kind of
Lauren,
we're going to give Lauren the floor.
So I spent the last 10 years in political online media, and one thing I got really wrapped into was the culture wars. And, you know, men are stronger than women. We shouldn't have, you know, men and women's sports, da-da-da-da. And I decided to log off for a year and take a step back to write a book on how corrupt everything was. And I started playing community sports. And I remember I was playing community volleyball, and they suggested a boys versus girls game. And some culture war slop, just like a tick, came out of my mouth. And I was like, oh, yeah, as if we should do that, the girls are going to get crushed. Everyone looked at me like I was a crazy person. And we play another round, and I realized when I'm actually observing the community teams in real life, the girls absolutely could beat the boys. Just because it's a local community game, not an Olympic game. They're tipping better, the boys keep hitting into the net, everything. But because I had spent the last 10 years online in culture war slop world, I was applying my online reality to day-to-day life instead of just observing day-to-day life as it is. And it made me look insane. And right now, the average person is doing this. They're informed more by these kind of deep-fried versions of reality that podcasters are giving them than they are by the world around them. So they can't go into that world and then compare because they're terminally online, especially young people. They've grown up in this world, and their information about what men and women are like are from the whatever podcast. All women are gold diggers. All men are...
True, Osterwick. I don't know if you just made that statement up or if that comes from somewhere else. Unfalsifiable claims have infinite predictive power. True.
Rapists, whatever they're giving them, than they are by the world around them. So they can't go into that world and then compare because they're terminally online, especially young people. They've grown up in this world, and their information about what men and women are like are from the whatever podcast. All women are gold diggers. All men are rapists. Whatever it is, this is the message that is permeating. And there has to be some sort of social consequence for cooking our reality like this.
Yes, Lauren, is that the average person? I sure hope it's not the average person. I agree with a lot of what you said.
Not us.
Maybe it's the average person who's terminally
online. And that is increasing. As people cannot buy property, as there are no real avenues forward for success in the real world, we are logging online. The closest thing a young person is going to have to a home is a moderately sized meme page. Like, that is, that you're actually building something at least online. That's why we all went into video games when we were younger during the 2008 economic crisis. It's an escape.
Okay, we have a minute left. Can you take 30 seconds of that, please?
Yes. On my podcast.
How did Lauren get out of the gravitational pull? Because I debated her, obviously, and changed it. No, I'm just kidding. I think she has a. One was that she was a genuine believer early on. Right? That whole Mediterranean boat shit was not like a tier two LARPer. This was like a person, or no, I guess that would have been the tier two person. She was like a genuine believer in the cause, I would imagine. At 19 years old, going out on boats and shit is probably like a genuine believer. And then probably as you go through stuff over time, depending on the space that you're in, some realities are just going to be untenable after a while because the contradictions, I sound like a son, become too much to bear. So for trad women, I think that trad women en masse kind of went through this like 5 or 6 years ago. I think Lauren was like the centerpiece for a few of these pieces. But it was basically like, you're a trad woman, you're part of these trad spaces, even though they all seem to hate women, but they don't hate you. And then you get husbands, and then the husbands actually are fucking insane. And you're like, oh shit, this is kind of fucked. And then you kind of realize like, fuck, my life experience is incongruent with the political stuff that I was believing in before. And then it kind of like breaks apart from there.
Podcast with my wife, Heather Hying. We have spent a lot of time talking about something that I call the Cartesian crisis. It is exactly...
Oh my God. Where are the Decoding the Gurus guys for the phrases that Brett makes up to explain reality? Fuck me, dude.
On my podcast with my wife, Heather Hying, we have spent a lot of time talking about something that I call the Cartesian crisis. It is exactly what Lauren is pointing to. Do not hear me as saying podcasts are better than you think. They're probably worse than you think. But it is necessary that we use this form in order to understand what is going on, because the mainstream alternative is not functional.
Okay, I'll give...
As opposed to the alternative that is functional. Give some examples of functional podcasts, please.
You the floor, you'll be able to end. I'll just say this. It'd be so much easier to listen to you. I think that I agree with you on many things, likely, if you would just be a little nicer.
You know what? I will decline, but thank you for the advice.
Okay.
You know,
I made the offer.
My extremely non-vituperative or vitriolic closing statement.
Sorry. Drama correction from earlier. Officer Nasty 70 is a regular in the Lib and Learn chat for Hutch, not LUS. That's on me. Too many streams last week. Okay. There you go. That's been published now.
I think that I agree with you on many things, likely, if you would just be a little nicer.
You know what? I will decline, but thank you for the advice.
Okay.
You know,
I made the offer.
My extremely non-vituperative or vitriolic closing statement here is that I agree that, I don't know what the hell a Cartesian crisis is, but I know there's a crisis in the modern podcasting ecosystem such that those of us who are journalists, I know people are in the audience here who are journalists, Aaron, I see, we lie awake at night worrying that we could have gotten a fact wrong, because that will obliterate our credibility. And then if we do unfortunately get a fact wrong, we're obliged to correct it. Brett evidently feels no similar obligation.
True.
He will just throw all this stuff out there into the ether and then advise you to employ some kind of cockamamie.
It was the non-vitriolic indie case, right?
15 seconds.
We're babies.
Oh, wait. Is he actually going to respond to the actual thing?
15 seconds.
Not, Brett.
Plug into your favorite AI the question, how many times has Brett Weinstein corrected his own error on his or someone else's podcast?
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Why?
This has been interesting, if nothing else. And yeah, have a good day.
Twenty-three minutes.